don't look so sad. I know it's so bad. But life goes on, and this world keeps on turning. Yeah, let's just be glad we had this time to spend together. There is no need to watch the bridges that we're burning. Lay your head. One more time.
Hey, we're right here, Studio W, The Buzz, your global radio network. Yes, call me. I know I played it earlier, however, just went through a medley of songs on The Buzz. Hey, welcome to the Soul Savage Show here on Studio W, coming to you every Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and 7 p.m. on the East and 6 o'clock Central, with our fabulous host, Q-Lynn Green, and Whitney tonight, and yours truly is still in, and featuring L. Roy Boyd III, a professor of speech and theater at Virginia State University, and a part-time professor of speech at Virginia Union University, my alma mater. He received his MFA degree from Virginia Commonwealth University in 2002 in theater and pedagogy. Boyd has been teaching and directing in educational theater for 25 years at Virginia and in North Carolina. He's a historian of African American film history, specializing in race movies. Oh, wow. You got to explain this to me, Professor. Blaxploitation films. You will have to explain it to the entire audience. Boyd is noted as a director in Richmond, Virginia. His most notable productions include Charcoal Street, Mahalia, a gospel musical, I Said I Wasn't Gonna Tell Nobody, but couldn't keep it to myself, and Vivacious. The Life and Music of Minnie Riperton. He also co-producing director of Cultural Libations, a multidisciplinary arts and humanities company with his partner, the fabulous and creative consultant here on The Buzz, E. Marjorie Jubilee. As a scholar, Roy has presented research moderated panels for the Black Theater Network, the Southern Theater Conference, and the Cultural Popular Conference. As an actor, Roy has performed in university community professional theater for nearly 40 years. He's performed his work at the Black Theater Network Conference, the Yale School of Drama, the Kennedy Center. He's also performed with Tony Award winner Andre DeShields. He studied under Robert Wynn Jackson and Douglas MacArthur Johnson, as well as Yvonne Yonis, Mark Brockow, and Kelly Morgan. As a director, his work has been produced in Norfolk, Virginia, Richmond, Virginia, my hometown, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, San Francisco, and New York. He has 40 hours of graduate hours towards his doctorate. He is a musician, singer, songwriter, a world-renowned musicologist. The second edition of his first book, Bless His Soul, The Agony, The Ecstasy, and The Destiny of Michael Jackson was released December 2018. Folks, hey, look, you got to kick back. Get back, grab a glass.
Longer than my first
look. You gotta give it up. And we're not done. He is also the co-host of the fabulous Monday Night Madness show here on Studio W. Buzz, give it up for the professor, right, Roy Boyd.
Thank you. Thank you, you know.
You went all out with the intro.
I should have edited. I just wasn't thinking. You know, I just sent the bio. My apologies.
No, you good.
Is that Q-Lynn?
That's Q-Lynn.
Yeah, okay.
And Whitney.
What's going on, man?
Q-Lynn and Whitney on air with us. Oh, my God. This is so great. my friend, Professor Q-Lynn, if you don't mind, I'm going to kick it off. I have a few questions, not unless you and Whitney want to jump in after that intro.
Hey, Whitney.
Hey, Professor, how you doing?
Good. You know, it's almost like a reunion. I haven't heard from you guys in about a year, so this is great. Okay.
Right.
You know, that's Q-Lynn's fault. I told Q-Lynn I would.
Don't blame me for it, man. Once he told me that, I got right on it. So that's not my fault. Don't stop putting it on me, man. He always tried to blame somebody. You probably told him about someone, so he started it last week.
Hey, don't put me in the company of that other guy. You know, don't do that.
We ain't going to go that route.
No. I'm excited.
I was going to say, it's good to have Professor on before you get started with your questions. I was going to tell him
for joining
us on the show. But we'll
it's a pleasure to be here.
And I forgot, Whitney, you want to ask us something before Will start?
That's fine. Whitney, please go. Please go
no,
on.
Will, you were fine. I was just making sure I spoke to him.
Go ahead.
Girl, we all good. Oh, my God. You know, I'm extremely excited about this because I met the, professor on, I wouldn't say a whim, because we did the Monday Night Madness show, and there was the fabulous, beautiful Imaja Jubilee, TV. Personality, mm-hmm. radio personality, writer, author, poet, brilliant, just ideas. She'll call me up, and she says, "Well, I got this idea." And this happens weekly, if not more. But anyway, this is how I met the professor. Professor, we met, and with your bio as extensive, movies, TV, stage, theater, and you also teach this, and you're an actual professor at two universities, Virginia State University and Virginia Union University, my alma mater. How do you juggle all of these things?
A lot of energy. A lot of energy, and you have to separate the day. You know, like Monday, Wednesday, Friday is one school, Tuesday, Thursday is another school, and just whenever bit of off time that you have, you just pour everything else, you know. But then sometimes it gets a little overwhelming, sometimes it gets a little thick, and then you know what, you just gotta stop and you gotta step back and you gotta breathe.
Well,
that's just it, man.
You know, I tell you what, and I look at your education growing up. When did you first discover the literary arts? Because you're not only into acting and acting and writing and things of that nature, but you're also you're a music lover. How did this all evolve?
Okay, I'm going to tell you, and I am sort of hesitant. And look, this isn't anything negative towards this particular artist, but I know the history involved with this particular artist. I'm a little hesitant to say, but I'm going to say it, and I am a proud black man. But at the age of 5, I saw Elvis on television. I saw Elvis, and then I thought, you know, that's it. That's what I'm going to do. That's what I wanted to do. And not necessarily music-wise, just the idea of just being on a stage before an audience, you know, and to just see the effect that he had that he had on the audience, you know, was kind of appealing, you know. And so you just go in that direction. So that's just pretty much it. And you know, the arts for me, it's like a hand in glove, you know. That's just it, you know, and then you turn on to the humanities, to literature, visual arts, film. It's all the same energy. You understand what I'm saying? It's all that same divine energy. You're right at home. So that's all, man.
Right.
You know?
I understand the energy, but then it also takes that person and, that mind creating, and it seems like that you see, things that's going to happen or what you want to do before you even do them. This is what I'm saying. But what at the age of 5 or 6, now you're also a musician, and I know you play the drums, which is, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, And you also play the guitar as well.
That's right.
And now, Q-Lynn can appreciate this because she's also a drummer, an excellent drummer, right? And
that's right.
Oh, absolutely. Uh-huh. So I'm sure you guys got a whole ton in common. But when did you pick up instruments?
Drums, it was middle school, 6th, 7th grade, and the guitar was 8th grade. And just went from there. And then, my sophomore year in high school, I formed a band and, also learned how I can mix, tapes and mix tracks, through a Radio Shack. Remember Radio Shack? They had those mixers and we had the boom boxes with the cassettes, and I learned how, just like Prince, how you can play all of the instruments with overdubbing. I had a microphone, and I hooked it up to the mixers, had a playback on a boombox, and had the mixer hooked up to a tape component of the old-time component system, and was able to mix. I could mix my drums and put my keyboards on top of it, then the bass, rhythm guitar, lead guitar, back in vocals, and then put a lead vocal, and I started making my own music, you know, and I was making my own stuff from then on, all through through college.
Hey, this is pretty amazing. So now let me ask you, we've never talked about this before. Do you have any siblings?
Yes, I do. Right. I have two older sisters and an older brother.
Yes. Right. So mm-hmm. Did you guys do this thing together? Was this just you alone? And how many of your family members are also into music and arts and theater?
I would say everyone. Everyone is now not as much as I am.
Right.
But everyone, I would say the rest of them are what you call aesthetes, you know, appreciators of it. Me, I am both an aesthete and a practitioner of all of the arts. That's what I was saying about me. As far as my siblings, it was just me. Not at all. We are talking about literally, a 20-year, 15-year, and 7-year difference between, myself and my siblings. I am the youngest. So, no, man. It was me.
You know, while you were speaking, I saw the guest. I said, he was probably the youngest. Now, the transition, not necessarily a transition, but your appreciation not only for the music that you were playing and things like that. How did you incorporate that also with arts? Because if you think about being a musician, that is a challenge on its own, right? And then also to incorporate that with the other arts like acting, being on stage. And something tells me when you were a little kid that you weren't shy.
It's sort of a situation that I deal with to this day. I may be... Well, I'm trying to overcome shyness right now.
Yeah, me too. I can appreciate that.
Because I see it as kind of a hindrance. But when I was younger, I may be shy up close and personal, but on the stage, it was an entirely different animal. And a lot of people find that very interesting and enigmatic, with artists as well. But as far as being a musician, you're right. It is challenging. There's definitely a dedication to it and a commitment nonetheless. With the guitar, I have to practice. I got to bone up on my chops because I lost my chops because I want to in a couple of years record a true album, go into a true studio and put my stuff down because I just feel that it's time to do that. I put all my energy when I got into college on, I put all my energy toward the theater because I realized I was a better actor than I am a musician. But I couldn't give up music. I looked at music from the area of an aesthete, and then I started looking
and approaching it from the eye and the approach of a musicologist. And so that's how I fulfill that inside of me, you know?
You know, you mentioned something very, intriguing, because a lot of people, they have various talents, but they really don't know which one to pick. And you acknowledge and were truthful, saying, you know, I figured I was a better actor and on stage than I was a musician. Not saying that you were not a good musician, but you were better at acting. And so Tell us a little bit about that. When did you start acting?
I started when I realized that I had some talent in it. It was the seventh grade. My first play was Oliver Twist. Oliver, the musical, and I played Fagin, kind of like the pickpocket pimp of orphan kids, you know? Yeah, and doing that, and then finding that I could sing and act and do choreography, and being up on the stage and really losing myself in the character, I was like, wow, you know, maybe I could do this. And also, just how I blew my father away. My father just, he could not believe that I could do this. And he was like, wow, man, you are really, really good. But I still questioned myself. I did it all through high school. Through high school, I won, and I'm not bragging, I'm just telling you and answering your question. I won Best Actor 4 years in a row, freshman, sophomore, junior, senior in high school. When I got to college and the director told the rest of the English faculty that I was one of the best. And when I heard that can't come from him, then I stopped questioning myself. I realized, okay, maybe I am good, you know. And then when I got out of undergrad, the following year, I went for my first master's in theater at Old Dominion University. So that's how...
You know, you just struck something right now, and something that I want you to really elaborate on with whoever's listening to our audience right now. And you mentioned something without saying the word, and that was confidence. You knew you could do it at that point. How important is that in whatever we do, especially in the arts? How important is that confidence, and how did you get it?
I'm going to paraphrase something. Was it Marcus Garvey who said, with confidence, you have won before you even started. It's very important, you know. And now, at this point in my life, I am just blown away at how important confidence is in every aspect of life. Man, you need it, man. You need confidence in just the little things in life. And confidence is divine. Confidence is energy. So we have to have that. We can't take it for granted. And, you know, not only intrinsically, but just in everything we do. I cannot continue to tell you how important it is.
You know, you say intrinsically. Oh, yeah. Thank you. You say intrinsically. And that's what we need to understand, because success without confidence, I mean, that is like breathing. It's lifeblood. You cannot succeed without it. It doesn't happen. Something else you mentioned earlier in my question, and I'm going to have to give it over to Q-Lid and Whitney at a point here, but we're having so much fun, is that you take someone like Michael Jackson. It was reported that Michael Jackson was really a shy person off stage.
Yet when he got on stage,
it was dynamic. It was like, whoa. How could this guy be shy and do what he does? So, and you have a book. Oh, my goodness, folks. What is that? Oh, my goodness. With your book, Michael Jackson, Bless His Soul. The Agony, the Ecstasy, and the Destiny of Michael Jackson, released in 2018. Let me ask you a question. Oh, God. First, we have to get back to that. Michael Jackson being shy off stage. And I'm hearing something in you, sort of a something similar there. Wow.
Yeah. It's just something about when you're on that platform, the for a group of people. It is a synergy that occurs between that group of people and you, the performer. You know, the true definition of performance is the act of doing something before others. You don't have to be talented in any art form to be a performer. We're all performers. Hell, every single one of us here on this show, we are performing. We are performing before the world. When you go into Costco, when you go to Sam's Club, and you're doing your shopping, and then there's that little lady in the produce aisle who, in produce section, who is in front of that kiosk, and she's frying what? Sausage. And she takes the sausage out, and then she cuts it in little pieces, and she puts it on a cracker, and she says, here, take a sample. She's performing. We all perform. We all do something. So we all have this innate quality. But when you are in a formal setting on a platform before others, there is something powerful there. And it's a power that is greater than our human self. And I think that's something that overcomes the shyness. I think that's something that pumps and injects that confidence in, and then you can shine. But you know what? That shine is not an egotistical shine. That shine is that light that's in that hem of this little light of mine. I'm going to let it shine. But the only problem with that is that our light is not little. My light is not little. Your light is not little. You are an extension of the divine. You are an emanation of the divine. You are the expression of the divine. And therefore, there it is. It's expression.
Mm.
Divine expression, my friend.
What would you say to our younger listening audience? Well, not necessarily anyone in the listening audience right now that aspire to do something, they want to do something, and they are lacking something. What would you say to them right now, if they're writers, authors, whatever it is, music? What would you say to them right now in your experiences that may help them get over or go towards their dream?
Number one, study the greats. That's the first thing. Study the greats in the areas that you want to succeed in. If you are a writer, study the great writers. Read all their books, everything in their overall, and then study their lives. And then kind of pattern yourself in their footsteps. Now, don't worry about that, because as you do that, you're going to find your own way. So that's one. Two, do not listen to any naysayers. Do not listen to any naysayers. And avoid any negative energy from others. Because let me tell you something. A lot of people are jealous, and they are jealous of your talent. And you got to do what you know in your heart is true to do. Okay? All right? That's the biggest thing. And then, of course, it's so cliche, but it's so true. Never give up. Never give up. Stay the course. Keep doing. Do something every day. If you can't write every day, but then read. You know, do something every day toward your goal. And then, look, stardom is not the be-all, end-all. Okay, it's just not the be-all, end-all. You know, adjust yourself. And look, the way the commercialized marketplace is these days, you may not want to be a part of that to begin with. Let me tell you something. We all have computers, okay? And if we don't have the computers, the technology is there. The technology is at our fingertips in 2020. Everybody can put themselves out in the world now, okay? Mickey Mantle, Grease Pit, mechanic can put themselves out into the world. There's no excuse. We have Zoom technology, which everyone has been using every day for the past month. You know there's a record button at the bottom of Zoom. You can record a show. You have an MP4, you can upload it on YouTube. Oh, YouTube! You can have your own YouTube channel. And then keep going, keep going, keep going. And this is the last thing I'm going to say, William, because I know it's a long answer. But do you know, you and I have been doing Monday Night Madness. We're pushing a year and a half now. We've been doing it for a year and some change. And I am noticing people, just in Richmond, talking to me about Monday Night Madness. they're listening. We stuck with it for a year, and the following is growing. And I know you can attest to that. You know why? Because we didn't give up. So
wow. Wow. And you exactly right. We're going to talk about it a little bit. And
yeah,
I don't want to have
consistency. That's all it is. That's all it's about.
Isn't it?
I mean, most people think, mm-hmm. I mean, people act like, you know, it's supposed to happen overnight. It ain't overnight. So, like, mm-hmm. I know, because when you understand how social media works and how people follow along, it's like, whatever people are interested in, that's what they're going to gravitate to. So, if you're posting about something that's popular at the time, or if you give your opinion, like, say, for instance, if it's somebody's talking about just something random, like people talking about Trump, it might be people that engage in it, but if they don't follow politics like that, they're not going to follow it. But if you follow, it's all about who's your audience. And if your audience follows whatever that is, that's what's going to make them gravitate towards. So,
and
it's all about understanding what your audience is. So, go ahead.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
now,
yeah,
this is what I want to do.
If I can go on,
Professor, please.
No. Just one tiny anecdote. If I could just piggyback on what you were saying about social media, this is a worldwide, global thing. Look, if someone finds you in New Zealand, man, that is worth a lot. If 20 people follow you in New Zealand, I'm serious, that's worse than maybe 50 people in this country.
You're right.
Okay? You got to look at that, and then you got to push and continue on. One day, I was surfing on the web, and I landed on a German website that reviewed my book, and no one told me. I was like, oh really? Germany? So, you know, and then I did the Google, I cut and pasted it, I did Google Translate, and it was a good review. So, hey, that's all.
Hey, Professor.
Yeah,
hey,
that's
all. This is so good.
Wow, we're so excited.
I'm extremely excited. Q-Lin, so are you, and Whitney, I'm going to toss it over to you guys in a minute, but I've got to say this. Not only in Germany.
Sorry.
I was talking to the host of the Teens Talk Truth Show here on Studio W the Buzz. Hey, also,
right.
Whitney, this might be great for your students. Maybe great for your students. We have a Teen Talk Truth Show here on Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. I believe, oh my God, 2 hour difference is noon there on Central, and Professor is 1 o'clock there. And I was talking to one of the teenagers who hosts the show. Folks, we really need to listen to our children. We really do. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to this kid. He's 14 years old. And I was telling him about you, Professor Pop Culture, because I know he loves Michael Jackson, right? And I told him about your book. Okay? He said, I've already read it. I said, whoa! He said, I have no idea. Folks, you're exactly right. If you get somebody in New Zealand, Australia, we have people in Dublin, Ireland that listen to our shows, folks. We have people in Jamaica around the world, and what we try to do is try to bring goodness. We want to bring something lighthearted, something good, something that's going to revive the show, which leads to my next question, and I'm going to toss it over to our co-hosts here, Q-Lin and Whitney. I know they're just jumping to get in. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, just one more question, go to a break, and then Q-Lin and Whitney, back to you, okay? All right. Monday Night Madness. Professor, would you please tell the Q-Lin, Whitney, and the audience, what is Monday Night Madness and what is our objective?
Absolutely. Monday Night Madness is, if I do say so myself, musicology at its best. What WB and I do is we take an artist, a genre of R&B, a theme, and we dissect it. You see, WB and I, we're doctors. We take the scalpels and then we just fold back the layers of who we're concentrating or what we're concentrating on that Monday evening. We have done shows with Earth, Wind, and Fire, the Isley Brothers, The Barge, Janet Jackson, Prince, Aretha Franklin, Betty LaBelle. We could go on and on and on. And we
Erykah Badu, D'Angelo. Oh my God, Aretha Franklin, Patti LaBelle. Wow, we did the Ohio connection. Funk.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Funk Brothers. We. Oh God, Minnie Riperton.
Yes, we did. Yeah. Oh, that was a good show. And you know, we go into the lives of these people. What was happening in their lives when they grew up? How they got into music? Okay. What was happening in the composition? The times that they composed these songs, what was happening in the studio when they recorded them, and what happened in the record companies, in the executive offices and boardrooms as well. What happened out on the road and on stage, you know, stories, just good stories. And you have all of that great music to reminisce on for 3 hours, you know. And William tells everyone every week, but it's true, you're not going to find anything else like that anywhere else. So if there are any listeners, not stealing, Q-Lynn, I'm just inviting, okay? Come and listen to Monday Night Madness from 5:15 to 8:15 p.m. on Pacific Standard Time. And if you're on the East Coast, 8:15 to 11 o'clock. Eastern Standard Time.
And you know, if I have to say so myself, it is the baddest show on the planet. You got WB and the professor kicking it back. We tell you, a professor, we say, kick back, grab a glass, and at some point time, you might need to move some furniture because we are not responsible if you break some glass tables because we jam. This is a educational jam, learning experience, is all of the above. I'm going to play a song. We'll be right back, and then I'm going to toss it over to Q-Lynn and Whitney. Professor, thank you so much for me allowing you to take up so much of your time. And Whitney and Q-Lynn, please forgive me, but I'm so intrigued. I'm excited. Oh, my God. I'm over the moon. Thank you. You're listening to The Soul Savage Show here on StudioWBuzz.com. StudioWBuzz.com. Having a great time here with the Professor of Pop Culture, Mr. Roy Boyd. Back to you, Kulin. I'm not going to take up any more time. Guys, I took over 40 minutes, and I'm sorry about that.
Yeah,
Kulin,
it happened for an hour. I thought he was just going to ask two questions. This turned into the Will Brown Show for an hour.
Hey, Kulin.
Kulin, you're a fine one to talk. To the new show.
Whitney, you know that Kulin is a fine one to talk.
Don't rope me into that. It happens to us all, though. Sometimes,
right.
Especially with the professor, he's so easy to talk to, and he don't mind talking about his life like that.
So good.
I get it.
No, seriously.
Yeah, we'll definitely have some questions for you. I thought he was going to have two. I did tell him two, right? I'm like that Southern Baptist preacher says,
yeah, we getting ready to close.
Yeah, 20 minutes later. Right, we're playing Al Green All Show. Birthday Appreciation. His birthday was on April 13th. A living icon, singer, songwriter, musician. You know, the guy I'm with, he actually gave me a present, and it was a midnight special DVD package. And because I'd be like randomly up late at night, like 3-4 in the morning, and I told him like months ago, like, man, I need to get that, and I kept forgetting to get it, and then he actually got it for me, and it's like 300 plus performances. It's like some bonus DVDs in it as well, and I was watching, I think I've watched from 1973 till 75. I haven't watched all of them yet, but I started watching them this week, and actually in 73, he was performing a couple of his songs he performed on there, and man, when I tell you, they was like, because most of it's like a tape, like the Midnight Special, it came between 73 and 1980, Burt Sugarman's. It came on midnight, and so on NBC, and it ran for like 73 till 1980, and it was actually live performances, like it wasn't like tape, like this was the first show that came on at midnight that let the guest performances, guest performers, perform their songs live without a backing track. And so it was a live band, live singing, and his show, the performances he did, you would have thought he was like any big superstar that's out right now. Like that was the level. And I like, the reason why I love watching it, because I can get a feel of who was who then. Like I get a real feel of just by the energy of the crowd, of the people that, cause it looks like they're just performing at a concert, but it's a live taping. And when I'm looking at the audience, the way they're receiving him, it's like, it's nuts. Like, it was crazy. Like, it was, like, straight pandemonium. Like, women were screaming. I thought halfway through some of his performances, they was going to throw their underwear on stage. Like, it was that crazy. Like, he's getting that kind of response from the audience. And I think it just really, I always felt that way about Al Green, that he was, like, a major factor in the 70s. But it's, like, certain artists during that time period. I love that. I love the watching those performances because I get to get a real feel, but it was just something about Al Green and how he was connecting with the audience. Like, it was a real connection. It wasn't just him singing his hits. It's like he's having like a moment like with the audience. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not so much worried about the song. Like, the song is following his lead. It's not him doing the song. Like, they following him. The band is following him. It's all those factors in it, and I just loved it. It's like, those moments for me, just watching that, I was like, this is what performing is. And he's like taking his time with the song, and he's giving it moments, and it's definitely church feel. Like all of it, I can see why after a while he became a minister, because that was definitely the energy that I was getting from him. Like it was like sexual, it was spiritual, it was like those two worlds were intertwining as well. And I can see why artists like D'Angelo, Prince, like all, like, studied that, and Shaka Khan as well. Like, you see those factors in why that's their favorite. And it's like, that's why. You know,
mm-hmm.
And yeah, I agree. I just picked him. Like, I do birthday appreciation. Like, I do kind of what you do, but I don't spend so much time on the artist. I try to break down, like, specifically what they've contributed, but I like to get to the album cuts. Like, so I mostly played the popular hits. I think I got an album cut that I'm playing at the end of the show. But
okay.
Yeah, I try to get to the root of that artist and really talk about the things they contributed. I feel like Al Green is one of those artists. But if y'all want to go, like, how do y'all feel about Al Green's music or whatever? Just, I guess, just what's your favorite songs or anything in particular, if you want to go in on that.
I'm going to tell you this. You just played one of my favorite songs from him. Still in love with you. And what I love about that is the shuffles on the hi-hat. I know you know
yes.
Q, Linda.
Yes. And you know what it is?
That is skill.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And you know what it is? Willie Mitchell. I bring it up all
yes.
the time. It's something about Memphis Soul that I love so much. And Willie Mitchell, I feel like when people talk about Chess Records and Stack Records, but I always feel like they forget about High Records and what they contributed to Memphis Soul. Like, when you talk about the definitive sound, like that Al Green sound, like, you have to attribute that to Willie Mitchell, because he gave that sound to Phil Johnson. He gave that sound not just to Al Green and Phil Johnson, but he gave it to O.B. Wright. You know what I mean? All those cats that came out of there.
You know it.
Because he had that musician mind and had that arranger mind to really focus in and put together a house band that could create those records and create that gospel-filled energy. But the reason why I say that was real Memphis Soul was because at the time, if you really look at it, during the 60s, it was mostly blues music. Like, it wasn't a definitive, like, even before Sax, like, before they got Isaac Hayes, you know, before that came along, it was, like, that definitive, like, soul sound with the horn section. Like, you didn't really hear that with, it was like blues and funk, all that mixed together.
Right.
They gave it a definitive sound with the horn arrangement. And I credit that all to Willie Mitchell. And I love the fact that Al Green and all that conglomerate, like, really got to really extend that and really have a time with it. But go ahead.
No. You hit it right on. Really, you stamped it. I think you need to write a book. And...
Yeah.
And I'm just like,
thank you.
Oh, I got goosebumps because you like High Records too, you know? But,
yes, I love them.
Yeah, Willie Mitchell, I believe, is responsible for the 70s peak of his career.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's who I credit to that as well. I also want to say, touch on everything that you said, that everything you pointed out, I like to kind of put it as Al Green's 70s overall, that period,
mm-hmm.
or even his entire career, I would say is the first cousin to Southern Soul, if you will, because of everything that you just mentioned, its relationship to the blues and the sax players and their contributions in it as well, you know. A couple of other favorite songs. The Gospel, Going Into Gospel, Everything's Gonna Be All Right. That one. His duet with Lyle Lovett for The Rhythm and the Blues in 1994, Ain't It Funny How Time Slips Away. That one. I also like his treatment of the Bee Gees' How Do You Mend a Broken Heart. That was good. You know, that was very, very good. And, you know, let's not ever forget, Let's Stay Together, you know? So,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness, I'm a Ram. High Records.
Yes.
From Al Green Gets Next to You. That was what, 70, 71 we're talking about?
Whitney, what's your favorite Al Green record?
I can't pick a favorite.
No, because when you listen to him, like, right before
we started the interview and stuff, like when I was listening to some of the songs that we're playing, it's just like it doesn't matter what it is that he sings, like that energy, the emotion, it's like it's transferred to you. Like you automatically kind of like get into this mode with him. Like I don't,
that's freaking
you get that with him. Yeah, like you get that with some artists, but with Al Green, it's like every time I hear his song, it's almost, it's not exactly like I'm hearing it for the first time, but like those feelings that he brings out, like I'm always surprised, like wow, that still makes me like feel this way. I don't know, his presence, like through his music, it's just, it's timeless. I don't have a favorite. I just like to, I don't know, I just like to hear his stuff, like, and I always have, no. Even as a younger kid, like when my parents would play it, I may not have known like all the words or the meanings or anything, but anytime like his music came on, it just, there's something kind of hypnotizing about it. Like, it puts you where you need to be, I guess.
The first song that I ever remember ever as a kid, I had to been like 4 or 5 or whatever, and my grandfather, he had an 8-track in his car, and one of the first records I remember is How Do You Mend a Broken Heart, and it's like, don't look so sad, I know it. I remember it like vividly, because he had the 8-track and everything popping, and it was like that, it was Al Green, Bobby Womack, it's so many different artists that he had on 8-track that I remember, but definitely Al Green. Like hearing that in the car on the 8-track, like, I know I'm telling on myself the age wise.
That's okay.
That's what it was. It was like,
mm-hmm.
That was it for me. And Al Green was like always that go to. I felt like he was I actually told the story on the show before about, I lied to a cafeteria lady before I told her that was I was related to Al Green.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
She believed me. She was like, how you doing? I was like, he's doing wonderful. He's doing great. I would do that. I carried it on for the whole school year. Yeah. Yeah, that's my deceptive side. I did that one time and she believed it. I was like, I can't believe she believed me. I was like, but yeah. I was saying that I was related to Al Green. I don't know. I may be related to Al Green. I don't know.
That's
but,
right.
Yeah. but yeah, I love Al Green's music. I love what he's, it's just what he's contributed to music is such a massive thing. And it's like, if you just look at the musical tree of who's came afterwards, like you can't deny, like, his, not only that, like, I feel like even his prom career, when people say, cause I say it sometimes, like, if I could go back to any era, I've always wanted to go back. Like, if I was an adult, I would rather be an adult in the 70s to where I can experience the live performances. But just watching it, just watching the tapes that I have now, it's like, okay, I feel that energy that he's trying to exude, and I can get, like, why he was so massive. But, yeah, that whole era from, like, 71 to, like, I want to say 75, he had, like, a good run. And it's like, the Living For You album, that's probably my favorite album of his, the 1973 album. I'm going to play an album cut from it, like I said. But yeah, Al Green is just one of those artists to where it's like you have to really take in, like, what it is. And I feel like just to really get a feel of who he is, you have to watch live performances. And I feel like I feel like that's the real artist to form, seeing him live. So, yeah.
And
I
his
think,
music
I think
is down home. It's that down home, true rural gut southern experience. You know, it's just something that you have to really experience. You know, outside of the music. You know, it's beautiful. It's just beautiful how he can express it so perfectly. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. What is it about? When you're taking in music, what is it? I don't know if I've asked you this before. Whenever you last time you came on, but didn't you say you were listening to the lyrics whenever you listen to music?
I do, what do I listen to? I listen to the whole package, but I think I listen to I guess there's one lead instrument with a lot of music, whether it's the keyboard or the guitar. Like, take James Taylor, for instance. The lead instrument for that's going to be the acoustic guitar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's
right.
Just whatever that lead instrument is. And then after that, if there's an arrangement, sometimes strings will bring on something very beautiful. It brings in a visceral, ethereal vibration inside of you, you know. And then from there, I start listening to production and try to listen the layers of each instrument, you know. Sometimes, a lot of times, I rearrange the music in my head when I'm listening to it. It's funny. And then sometimes when we're in the car, Imaji will look at me because I will sing along with the backing vocal arrangement instead of the lead arrangement, you know, or something. You know, I just sort of take it apart, you know, and such. So I think I listen to it differently than most people, you know. That's all. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I should have pinpointed it more to Al Green. Like, are you taking in everything? Because I feel like the instrumentation is, like, obvious. Like, most of the songs are, like, arranged to where it's, like, specifically to a certain instrument. Like, you might hear more of the horn section, or you might hear more of a guitar riff that's leading it, but it's like, what do y'all take in? What pulls you into an Al Green song when you're listening to it?
Okay, but Al Green, with those Willie Mitchell recordings, that Hammond B3 organ, like Toward the Good Times.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
The drums, especially for Still in Love with You. And of course, that bluesy guitar, that bluesy lead guitar from those recordings. And of course, the strings, you know? So, that's it. But it's that Hammond B3, girl. Yeah. You know?
What do you pull in from what are you listening for? What do you expect when you listen to a Al Green song, Whitney?
Really, for me, everything with Al Green is that voice. Like, I know that's Al Green the moment I hear it. And, like, the music that accompanies it, it's one of the better balances. Like, you know, you listen to some artists and either they're singing over or under the music, or it seems like maybe the music kind of takes them out at times. I don't get that with him. And also with his songs, there's usually that moment where you can like call me, that moment, call me, and it just keeps going. And it like puts you, like you really in it, and then you're singing and you're moving. Like anything that I listen to with him, I just always hear the voice first. And then I'm like, okay, where is he about to take me? What's this experience?
And that's crazy you mentioned that, because when you said that, it made me think of, I remember watching an interview with Phil Johnson, and I remember him saying that because they would play at the Royal Studios in Memphis. They recorded most of those records there. Those that were signed under Hot Records, they did most of their work under Royal Studios. And Phil Johnson said that when he was playing with the rhythm section band that Willie Mitchell created, the house band for Hot Records, he said that he was that, like, fiery singer. Like, he would jump in, like, he had a lot of energy. But he said the way Willie Mitchell wanted him to approach the song, he wanted him to, like, lay back in the pocket of what the song is doing. Basically saying that let the music lead you to where you're supposed to go vocally. And he said that that wasn't really natural for him. He said he learned how to do it, but he said that it learned him to, like, take it down a pace. And I feel like that's why, because there's so many that came from out of Hot Records, but I feel like the reason why Al Green really was a superstar from there, that really got the most success from under Hot Records, was because he understood like what Willie Mitchell was trying to do when he created that band. And Al Green like stays in that pocket, with the song. Like, and he let, and even though he's supposed to be doing what the band is doing, but they, most of the time, I feel like they would ended up, if we saw, if there's any kind of behind the scenes footage of him recording, they're probably following his lead because that's just natural for him to be in that pocket. You know what I mean? It's just certain artists, mm-hmm. when you get together with a production team that gets it, when they mesh with, like, with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, like, the reason why Janet, like, works perfectly for that system is because she just fits it. It's just certain, it's like with a coach with a quarterback. When you can connect in that way to where you just get it and it clicks. It's same with Babyface and Tony Braxton, and Babyface and L.A. Reid with Tony Braxton. It's like, the reason why those records, that first album, could do so well is because he fit that system.
Right.
Like, it's one thing when you can understand what it is that they're saying, but when you can get into the music, it's like they, it's like a shell of themselves is like being projected to a higher frequency, if that makes sense. It's like them digging inside the music, and it's like they're meshing themselves in the music, and they're getting lost in it, basically, if that makes sense.
It makes sense,
right.
Because there's a connection there. They are connecting on a higher frequency. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and yeah, mm-hmm. and that's why those Al Green songs, I feel like, pull you. Like, it's not even just like you're just singing a song. It's like lyrically you're feeling it, vocally you're feeling it, and the production, it's like all in one. It's like what I talk about with you, it's like three things with music. It has to be the vocal ability with the harmonies, ad-libs, like knowing the right placement, the technique, and then the production, the instrumentation, and then also the lyric side of it. And all those three things have to align. And I feel like Al Green, like, off the bat had that because he understood, I feel like he understood what worked for him. And when he got together with a production team that got that, it was just like a marriage. Like, it was perfect. I feel like those records, the reason why he could consistently, like, bat for bat, like, what you got, like, Love and Happiness, I'm Still in Love with You, you know, all those records, like, none of them, like, he didn't have no sleepers, like, when he first came out. Like, all of them were hitting, either they were mid-tempos or ballads. Like, he could knock them all out the park, but yeah, if that made more sense. I feel like I was...
It does.
I got lost a little bit talking about it, but yeah.
It does. You know, Professor, you and I, we talk about this on a weekly basis, how an mm-hmm. artist can connect with an artist. You have a lot of great, great, great singers out here. However, there are a few that connect with the audience like no other. You take a Luther Vandross, you take an Al Green, you take a Michael Jackson, you take a Prince. And these artists were able to connect with the audience, and the audience felt what they were seeing. You know, it's almost like they were realizing something that was, you know, going on within themselves. But can you elaborate on that a little bit?
How a singer can connect to an
audience. They connect to the audience. What the most important thing that an artist can do is connect with the audience. It's just like an actor.
Yes. I think it's something that's indescribable. You know, it's like sometimes it's a soul connection, and sometimes a singer can just do a lick or just do a triplet roll that is sort of marinated in the soul, to just have that inner soul that you just put that they just put into that, and it just makes the audience swoon and just makes the audience just go, oh. When you listen to James Brown live at the Apollo, you hear this loud scream from this woman in the audience when he does a particular ballad, and it's that connection that you're talking about right there. But I think when you're skilled and you touch on that soul, it's that black soul, you know, and it's something not just necessarily musically, but something in our lives, something that we can hook up to, something that we hook up to on the corner of T and 34th Street in Washington, D.C., something that we can pick up on that we've experienced in the Black Baptist Church, something that we can pick up on in the juke joint, you know, over a chicken sandwich, you know? I mean, it's hear these things, and we've been there before. And you're right, WB, the talent is getting it out orally, and you have to be, I feel you have to be trained. Now, you said there's some good singers out there, and you're absolutely right. There are some folks, it is innate. They come to the planet with that. And it's like, whoa, man, where'd you come from, you know, with that, you know? And some folks, you know, have to be trained.
Right. And, you know, Q-Lynn, you know this for yourself, because there are certain artists that you just absolutely love. And you come on week after week after week, and you have some favorite artists. And there's something about that connection with that artist that you don't have with any others. Q?
Yeah, it's true. It's like, for me, like, definitively, like, I can name off, like, the artists that, like, it's like an absolute connection. Like, for sure, Chaka Khan, like, I feel like I never try to pick my top favorite ever, but if I had to pick one, it has to be Chaka Khan. Because it's like, sometimes I just be listening to her, like, I've listened to the song, like easily, like, hundreds of times. But every time, like, I find something new with how she sung the note, and the way she sings the note, it, like, blows me away sometimes. And it's not even all the razzle-dazzle with it. It's just her approach to singing it. It's the phrasing,
right.
The vocal exactly. Phrasing, the way she has, like, certain nuances, the way she sings, where it just pulls me in. And then I would say, like, Prince. Like, that's ultimate for me. It was mostly, like, the musicianship side of it when I really started, like, because when you're listening to it as, like a regular fan, it's different. But as a musician, when I was trying to study music,
yes,
and really digging deep into it, I'm like, yo, this stuff, like, because at first,
yes,
it seems complicated when you're listening to it, but it's just really simple chords that he's playing. He's just adding different elements to it to make it seem like the production is doing a lot, but it's
mm-hmm.
just, he's found some way to make it coincide, to make it, he made the chord progression simple, but it's just like, how did you come up with that? Like, just anybody regular wouldn't have came up with those kind of notes, and then it has, like, a gospel feel to it, like, it just has a certain thing to it, and then it's like Chaka, Prince, Anita Baker, like, for sure, like,
mm-hmm.
she's another one. The way she approaches a song, it's her ear, it's like gospel and
mm-hmm.
jazz, but I feel like it's majority jazz, what I feel, and it's just her tone and her register that, like, I love the way she can go from a contralto, like, she can build her way up to a higher note. And it's like,
mm-hmm.
if you try to sing that, if you're not in that kind of vocal range, then you're only, anybody else would have to sing it in a falsetto note, but she's singing it in a full voice note. Like, some of those notes, like, if I tried to sing it, I would have to go in falsetto, because my voice naturally can't do that. You know what I mean? In order for me to get into that register she's in, I have to go falsetto.
Right.
That's a crazy note. And it's the same thing with Chaka, like, she's singing all that in a full voice. And it's like, how do you sound like a trumpet? Like, that's crazy. Like, it's nuts. It's like, she literally sounds like the trumpet when I hear it. And it's like, when you hear her early records, like, my favorite album of hers is the Naughty album. And it's like that whole track listing is bananas. Like, she has Lou Dawn on there. She has the keyboard player from Earth, Wind & Fire. Oh, my God. It's like everything they created. And she had Ashford and Simpson on it. It's like stuff that she's created from there. But, yeah, those are my top. Do y'all have, like a definitive, like, top favorite singer ever?
Oh, my goodness. Hey, that is a great question. And, you know, as a matter of fact, Professor would tell you, we did a segment on Chaka Khan. How many weeks ago was that? 3 weeks ago? It was
something like that, 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Oh, my God. And Q-Lynn and Whitney, you probably already know, Chaka Khan covered and or collaborated with or sang with, oh, God, so many artists that we can't even name right now. And she is one of my favorites, believe it or not, understated, underrated. Oh, my God. She just blows me away every time. Randy Crawford.
Oh, yeah.
It's something about her voice. That distinctive voice, that melodic tone. And Professor, mm-hmm. we've been talking about this for about a year or so. And we're going to come up with a show how certain tunes, how certain notes, how certain things just stimulates the soul.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. That's a great one.
Yeah.
He just came up with something on the spot. Right.
Oh, yeah. That's how the idea is.
I think that happened last time, the professor was on, though. Like, that's just how
Will
and he vibes.
Yeah. And we do think, a lot of it, you know what, the professor and I, oh my God, the professor, Imaja Jubilee, was my original co-host on Monday Night Madness. And she called me one day, and she said, Will, I've got a TV show doing here and a radio show. I can no longer participate on Monday Night Madness. And guess what? I have a replacement for me. And she named somebody else. I said, no, that's okay. I'll manage. So she called me back the next day. And she said, Roy, the professor wants to do the show. I said, yes. And we've been going after it ever since for about a year and a half. And it is so much fun, Q Lynn and Whitney, because you learn about artists that you, you know, and the thing about it is we have no idea of how many other artists have collaborated with other artists. And Q Lynn, you already know that is a small circle. We don't think about it, right? Who collaborated with who? And they covered so many other different artists and stuff like that. And that's why it's so much fun. But one thing I would just want you, Professor, to address, and you, Whitney, and Q Lynn, how healing is music, and what would we be without music?
Oh my God. Mm. What would we be without music? Man, I told y'all, man, those artists that I named, and then some more, like Lionel Isley, like listen to the Isley Brothers. And Stevie Wonder for sure. Like listen to Stevie Wonder when you hear Sir Duke. When I hear Sir Duke,
oh man,
puts me in a good mood.
Oh,
puts me in a good mood like every time. Like just the lyrics and what he's talking about in the song is just incredible. Like I feel like if you listen to a Stevie Wonder song, it will pull you out of a bad mood. Like I'm telling you, because he has so many you can go to and. I feel like all his are positive, and it can put you in it, especially if you listen to Talking Book. I feel like it's a real, real positive, you know? Yeah, it's just, for me, I'm just saying, it's like, sometimes it's just,
mm-hmm.
I feel like if we didn't have music, especially artists like Stevie Wonder, like, mm-hmm. I feel like those, it's certain songs that you can naturally gravitate to if you're in that space to receive it. If that makes sense.
Julian, you know, Talking Book's no joke. That is no
and
joke.
Then Sir Duke, he says in like the first verse, he's like, music is a word within itself. With
there
length,
you go.
We all understand. Mm-hmm. And with equal opportunity, we can sing, dance, clap. And if the record has a groove, don't make it a groove. Like, I feel that, like on so many different levels when he says that. Cause it's like, just because it has a groove don't mean it's in the groove. That means that it's not hitting you a certain way. And I feel like Rick James said the same thing. He was like, I need more fire in my rock, and I need more fuck in my folk. You know what I mean? And I quote it all the time because it's one of my favorites because it just clicks. It's like you have to connect with music, or you're just simply just listening to it.
Q-Lynn,
that's what I felt when he said it.
I've got one word for that. And it's called passion. And Q-Lynn, this is off your chart for whatever you sent me. I'm just going to go off the chart right now. Can I do something for you right now, please?
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, what is it? Uh-oh. Oh, no. There we go.
They can feel it all over.
That's right. Feel it all over. Welcome back. This is the Soul Savage Show on Studio W the Buzz. Q-Lin, I had to do it for you, girl. You dropped that gem, and hey, we had to play it.
Yo, this is something about Stevie Wonder, Purdue, and he wrote that song to get for a tribute to Duke Ellington. That's why it's called Purdue. And really, he's doing little song lyrics in there in between, like the second verse, he's giving appreciation to Count Basie and, Ella Fitzgerald, just all the architects of musical architects that he has appreciation for. He put it in song. And so all these other, like, I think Glenn Miller, Count Basie and all that. It's just, that's really, he's really astute in the music. And it's like, him paying it back by like, these are the musicians that I feel don't get the recognition or appreciation.
Yes.
So he took it upon himself to, you know what, I'm gonna show appreciation to them. And then also Dinah Washington as well.
Man.
Louis Armstrong, all that.
Q-Lin, do you see the relationship between jazz and R&B yourself when you're listening?
Do I see the relationship between jazz and R&B?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. It's it's just the technicalities of how to play it. That's what makes it different. And it's some artists, like with Stevie, like it's all through the song. And it's his, you could tell his influence was more of the big band swing.
Yes.
Like what the Louis Armstrong did and what Duke Ellington did. You know, with that whole vamp.
Wow.
Right there, that's a tribute to that big band, because that's a specific sound. It's not just, you know what I mean? You could tell it's a composition.
Yeah.
I shouldn't even call it a band. It's a real composition to where, you know, you have real horn section, you have real, like, horn players playing that part, and he writes it out and composes it. And so that factor to it, he's like, this is specific. I'm creating something specific. When I say Sir Duke, I want y'all to hear these horn sections. I want y'all to hear that. And he's implemented it in the song. And that just shows you his genius for him to create all that in his head. Like, for you to, you know how hard it is to compose stuff like that, and he just has that whole sword in his mind, and it's this is a specific thing that I'm doing. Just like when he created other records that were tributing artists, like when he created Master Blaster, paying tribute to Bob Marley, it's that reggae offshoot. Like, he gets it. Like, you have to be a student of the music to get those things and be able to understand that and making it connect and be able to play any genre he wants to. And I think the marriage between jazz and R&B, the only thing that separates it is R&B is mostly, it's geared towards a certain thing. Like, you'll get, it's more focused around the lyrics. Like, in terms of heartbreak, it's more associated, even though jazz has those records too, but it's mostly in the instrumentation and how it's played. Like, with R&B, you'll mostly hear piano chords. You'll hear more of I don't know how to describe it. The evolution of R&B started to, you know, you see with Al Green, that sound was particular, but then also you had artists like Luther Vandross come in the 80s, and then that sound starts to, you start hearing more ballads, and then you start hearing more, sort of the energy, it started to sort of transition, like with Gamble and Huff, like they created a Philly sound, like that's a significant sound because they used more string arrangements than anything. And then Barry White, like his became more string arrangement and more rhythm section. It just depends on what it is. But jazz music is not necessarily a particular thing. Like, I feel like R&B is more of a structured thing. Jazz is like structured and not structured at the same time.
It's more of what jazz is
doing than anything. It's not necessarily, they might format it to where they can create a song from it, but it's mostly just them in that space to where they're trying to create whatever that is, how they're trying to compose it.
Right. The most amazing thing about jazz, if you notice that, it will, like, they'll start with that melody that you recognize, right? But then they go off into a whole different universe and
improvisation.
That's what Q Lynn said, and then bring it all back, man. And just like
that's the same marriage with blues music. It all has that same factor. It's geared towards a certain instrument because blues does the same thing. And the only difference is they might take the guitar. Like, you're gonna hear the guitar, like when you hear Albert King and B.B. King, like, they're gonna sing the song, "Thrill is gone, the thrill is gone away," and then he's gonna throw that bar, and then once he gets to that end of that bridge, he's gonna go right, da-da-da, and then you're gonna hear that guitar part for like a good 8 to 12 bars. You're gonna hear him vamping off that, and then with jazz music, it might be the upright bass you might hear for a while, depending on who's playing it.
With
John Coltrane, you're gonna hear the horn section, you're gonna hear maybe a jazz chord, and then also with gospel music, it's the same factor. You might hear, like with gospel, it's that same energy, but you might, the spirit, is what we call it, is a spirit. Like, we might end the song, but it might continue on for like 5 minutes. If whoever's singing it feels it, you're gonna hear it keep continuing. It's that same energy. It's just somebody else leading it differently. Like with soul music, like most of it that's driving it, that separates it from blues music is just simply the rhythm section from blues music, because blues is mostly guitar. Like, they don't have like a whole set band. It might be just a guitar player, a drummer, and a bass player. That's it. With a soul band, a funk band, like what Earth, Wind & Fire did, you got like a 12, 13 piece band, and you have like a whole horn section. You got a whole rhythm section is different. That's why those sounds are there. But it's all in the same. It's just what that music is focused on. That's what makes it that. What makes gospel music is maybe the organ. Like he talked about the Hammond B3. You're going to hear that mostly on the record. You're going to hear, and depending on how current it is, if you want to go to like contemporary gospel, like Walter Hawkins, you're going to hear a more set, like, it might have a little hip-hop rhythm to it. Like, if you go to Kirk Franklin, you might hear that underneath it, but it's still, like, rhythmically gospel, but it just has that S to it, and it has, like, the choir. You're going to hear a choir. You're going to hear certain kind of notes. With R&B music, you might, it just depends on what era you're in, because again, like when we go through the 70s, the 80s, and 90s R&B music, it's all different, but the joining factor to it, it might have a gospel feel to it, because most of R&B singers from back in the day, they have that gospel upbringing, so you're going to hear most of that in the records, because that's all they're pulling from. It's from that source. And so when they take it to R&B, they have an R&B, but then the production might have like a certain kind of rhythm underneath it, or have some, a certain kind of sound. Like with Timbaland and Missy Elliott did, like they had a certain sound and they had certain artists that could take it a certain way. Like what Aaliyah did when she did One in a Million, it has a certain kind of sound to it, because that's their flavor, but he has samples in there from, the artist off of the High Records. What's her name? I forgot. That I Can't Stand the Rain. She took that sample and put that in there. Like, that's soulful, but she made it her thing. I forgot the name.
Who is it? Professor?
I can't stand the rain.
Come on, folks.
Her name.
We got somebody Google something or do something here, because
I know. I need to do that, but that. I had her in my head too. It's Brian something, I think.
I'm drawing a blank too. I'm drawing a blank too, because when you say that, I say, I know what that is, right? Folks, look, out of the four.
Oh, and people.
Okay, come
name.
On. Thank you. You just saved us.
And people. Yeah, she sampled. She sampled that, but yeah, that's what it is. But yeah, Mr. Roy Boyd, thank you so much for coming on. Do you have any lasting words before we go to break real quick?
Yeah.
Just how do you keep the music playing? To quote Quincy Jones. Just keep it playing. Keep on trucking.
Wow.
Started on Quincy Jones. Quincy Jones is my all time, like, for real producer.
Are you serious?
Don't get me started on Quincy Jones.
Well, Q Lynn.
That's my all time.
Oh my God. I can't believe that you didn't hear our show Monday night, because Professor, why don't you tell Q-Lan, who do we feature on Monday Night Madness this past Monday?
We featured what we call the Quincy Jones Organization. Q-Lan, you know, it's a clique. It's always the same group of people who headline anyway a Quincy Jones album. And there may be some younger artists, new artists every album, but we took that group and we highlighted their individual works, and that's who it was. People like Chaka Khan, Ashford and Simpson, Patty Austin, okay?
Yes.
Luther,
keep going, Professor.
Oh, God.
Like, put Louis Johnson in there?
I'm trying to pull it up now, but the professors, oh my God, this show, it was off the chain. We could only get through, how many artists did we get through, Professor? And we might have to do a part three to this.
Might have to, yeah.
Oh my God. Ashford and Simpson. Valerie Simpson, Ray Charles, hey, Whitney, Q Lynn, it was a show to be remembered. I'm telling you right now, we are featuring Quincy Jones, and Professor, I'm going to say on air right now, I think we have to do the part three here on Monday night. And we've been featuring, and some of those other artists, Q Lynn, this is spontaneous. Can you name five artists that Quincy Jones worked with?
Who are you talking to?
I'm talking to Q Lynn.
You? Oh, you talking to me? Oh, I don't know. I was like dazing off. Oh, for sure. You talking to the Quincy Jones fanatic.
Like, okay, well, come on. I want 10.
Oh, you going up the adding? Oh, that's easy. Okay, we got James Ingram, Michael Jackson, Louis Johnson Brothers, the Russell Johnson. You got Tamia.
Come on.
Campbell. Justin Scruggs. We got Herbie Hancock. We got Don't make me keep going. We got
keep going.
The 80s, the Curtis Blow. You got, listen, we keep going. Don't make me get up. I said to you right there.
Hey, we have time.
Donna
Girl,
Washington.
You need to put out a book for real. Wow.
Donna Washington, Aretha Franklin.
Miss Q Lynn Green, queen, founder, creator of the Soul Savage Show. I dare you to listen Monday night to Monday Night Madness for part three.
Listen, I told you when y'all did, I appreciate y'all doing the Bill Withers show because
you did.
I told
yes, you did.
I did. It was a
all
great
right.
show. I listened to it and. Yeah, I'm definitely tuning in or whatever, the next show.
Oh.
But, Mr. Boyd, do you have anything you want to say before we go to break? Do you have it, before we go to break?
Just thank you. Thank you for having me on. It's been a great experience. I always love coming on to Soul Savviness, you and Whitney. Whitney, thank Aww. You as well. WB, thank you. For everything that you do on this show.
You know, you are my partner. You are my partner in crime.
True.
Hey, Q-Lynn, Whitney, the professor and WB, we have dubbed ourselves the East Coast, West Coast Connection.
That's right.
That's it.
East Coast, West Coast Connection.
All right.
That's it.
Thank you. I appreciate you so much for coming on. It was a treat. It was fantastic. I'm glad you're rapping with us about Al Green, one of my favorites of all time, and we're going to go to break with some more Al Green. Like I said,
appreciation
all show.
Hey, Q-Lynn, Queen, Q-Lynn.
He's trying to butter me up.
He's pouring it
out.
Because he's trying to distract me.
Queen.
Go ahead.
Queen.
Please go. Go ahead.
Your Highness.
Go ahead. Oh, my God.
I mean, I'm talking about the one, the queen. All right. I don't know what the professor was. Monday night, are we going to do 6 minutes of rage?
That's what I was going to. That's why I was
okay.
trying to move with
Well, I don't want the professor. It's I don't know whether he wants to hang on for the rage or not, but he may have some comments.
What is it?
6 minutes of rage. This is when, this is quite, I could sort of, exhale on my on the so we talk about current events. Stay tuned. Be right back. This is what do we have right here? Yeah. Let's get it.
Now that you're with me, I want to keep you free to do the things that you want to do. The joy in life is loving you, but now the day has come. Let you know where I'm coming from. Yeah, the best of my year will go to you. It's the only thing I can do. But these things don't come overnight. Loving you, baby, and I think I'm right. Let me say before I forget, loving you, baby, is where it's at. Yeah. What you done for me. No, baby, set my heart free. Yeah. Oh, what a feeling. Yeah. Feeling, yeah.
make sense now. Anyway, forgive me, baby, if I do wrong. I haven't been a true man for so long. Let me say before I forget, loving you, baby, is where it's at. Yeah.
Welcome back. Hey, this is the Soul Savage Show on Studio W, The Buzz. Hey, welcome back. Hey, folks, Q-Lynn, before we go into the rage, I just want to thank the professor for coming on. Professor, hope you're hanging in. If you have time, we understand that this is the rage coming up. Any responses, we'll talk about Al Green, featuring Al Green. It's his birthday. Hey, I want to give a shout out to Melvin Cole. He is a Las Vegas performer, Al Green impersonator. He knows him personally. He's listening in. He says, thank you. Wow. He just sent me a promo package with him and pictures of Al Green. So, Q-Lynn, you're right on time.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to Al Green. His birthday was April 13th. So, shout out to my favorite, my top favorite singer of all time, Al
Man.
Green. One of the best, one of the greatest. But yeah, go ahead, Will, with your 6 minutes.
That's good. Right. Oh, my God. The black death rate due to the coronavirus, all-time high. We have to ask you questions why. Is it diet? Poverty? What is it? Or something else? Could it be bus service? Urban transfer? Transit. Home health care? Taxi, limousine, nursing care, postal service, food industry, restaurants, concession, hotel, security, parking. Oh, my God. How about church services, daycare, waste management, military? Do I need to go for? Because you take Louisiana, you take Minnesota, you take other countries, or not countries, but actually cities here in the United States, the black fatalities in this coronavirus, 33%. But in New York, the Hispanic population is 33%. So that tells you, it's not only about diet, folks. And don't buy into the hoax, because there are some other wings out here that want to make this a black virus now. Can you get that? I never believed that it was one bat. One man that ate a bat in China, and all of a sudden is all over the globe. Now, the United States is investigating right now. Was this created in a laboratory? I want you to think about that. Do we have a king that has absolute power? Folks, there has been no other time more important right now than to go out and vote, right? Nobody elected a king, all right, but a leader. Are your checks delayed? 45 says right now, Oh, I didn't know that my name was on the bottom of your check. How in the world did it get there? Okay. If you are expecting a paper check, expect Donald Trump's name to be on it. If it has been delayed, that's because they weren't set up on it. They had to retool in order to put his name on the bottom of your stimulus check. China, Iran, remember they made a statement, all right? And think about the terrorists that were put on China. Think about the terrorists and the retaliation that was put on Iran. And Iran made a statement. Oh, yes, we will retaliate in ways that you don't even expect. COVID-19, folks. COVID-19. The U.S., remember? They are doing an investigation right now on whether this was created in a laboratory. I'm not going to spew out fake news or anything like that. But I said, Q-Land and Whitney, you already know, that I've said for weeks and months now that I don't think that this happened out of someone eating a bat in China, Wuhan, China. Oh, there are so many conspiracies. We're not here to spew those. But U.S. is investigating right now whether this was done in a laboratory. You know, and the thing that I'm really, really angered about is that now blacks are being discriminated behind this. Do you know there are blacks in China and Japan that are being discriminated right now and can't even go into a restaurant? Read a report last week that in Nigeria, a Japanese restaurant will not allow blacks in there. What in the hell is going on? If you think I'm enraged, you're absolutely right. I'm enraged about this. Makes no sense at all. In New Orleans, oh yes, they did have a Mardi Gras. And the governor and the mayor said there that they would not have had this if they had the right information. Also, do you know that Trump was saying the other day, yo, oh yes, we're going to send ventilators to Russia. What is going on? Oh, I have no idea about this. I have no idea about that. Yet, they disbanded the health organization that was supposed to protect us against this back in 2018. All right. They had a playbook that would tell you how to handle yourself in a pandemic like this that was left by the Obama administration. They were briefed on this in 2017 when Obama handed over the keys. And not only did he hand out the keys, he handed out an economy that was on the uprise. You can do the facts yourself. The unemployment, better than Trump's. Okay, the job rate, better than Trump. The stock market, better than Trump. Check it for yourself. This has been my 6 minutes of rage. Back to you, Q Lynn and Whitney.
Hey, good 6 minutes of rage, Will. Roy, do you have... yeah, he talks about a lot. Man, I'm just... Listen, I have nothing to have a guest on.
I'm so still mad.
I talk the way I usually talk, because it ain't polite. But... Boy, if you have any response to his segment,
it's all good. It's really all good. I have to leave you beautiful people because I have a conference call at 9 right. o'clock. But thank you. Thank you again. Thank you.
Oh, no problem. Oh, thank you so much for joining us.
Professor,
I'll see you Monday. Go ahead.
Thank you for your time, Professor.
Sure. And Q-Lynn, look. With your knowledge and understanding of music, when I get back into the studio, you're producing me. Okay.
Hey. Oh, I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm definitely all over.
Okay.
But you know, my rate ain't high either. It's not out of the park. So, just so that I said, for anybody else listening in, if y'all hit me up, it's crazy. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us on the show. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Till next time, everyone.
Hey.
All right.
My partner.
Yeah.
I'll see you Monday.
Okay. You got it, man.
All right. Q-Lin, back to you.
See, I told you. That's why I was trying to scale it, because I knew it. I knew he was getting ready to go. So that's why I was like, but Will was so excited. I was like, I'm going to let Will just have this excitement.
Yeah, we're good. Well, thank you.
I was like,
check this out. Thank you. Thank you, my queen.
What? That's so funny. That is hysterical. That is hysterical. I have literally nothing else to add. Like,
oh, wow.
Do you want to go?
Oh, my God.
No, like about which part? About the rage? Any of it.
No. You guys got to say something about this rage. Folks, no. I'm not going to let you off the air. Now, Q-Lin normally asking for... Well, hold on. Oh, Whitney. Q-Lin is normally asking for overtime. And Q-Lin... No, Q-Lin, I'm not... No. You're not going to do this to me, Q-Lin. It's not going to happen.
No, I told you...
No, Q-Lin. You never... You got... No, hold on. You got to comment on something. Comment on something. Whether it's your stimulus check...
Okay. I didn't get one. I haven't got one yet. I don't know. I'm still waiting on mine.
Dang, Will. He dug deep for that laugh.
I think something to the show, because it ain't made my way to my direct deposit. Is it coming through paper checks, or are y'all getting it through deposit?
You know you can check, right, to see if you're getting it.
How do I check? I don't even know.
I can send it to you because that's what I did. If you just Google, well, you was a mess. If you look up like check my, I can dial with Will right now. She goes all out over there laughing this hard.
I'm sorry. We don't
hear radio silence.
I'm sorry.
And I'm gonna be extra concerned.
Okay.
Whole lung has to come out. If you look up for everybody else out there, Q-Lin, I'll send you the link.
I'll
for
be
everybody
good.
Everybody else, if you just Google, like,
hey, send me the link too.
Get what? My payment. Okay. Yeah. Just, if you Google, I'm done with Will.
Okay.
If you Google, get
I'm
my
sorry.
Payment.
I'll cut off my mic. Okay. I'll cut off my mic. Okay. But I got a question, real quick. Okay. Have you gotten yours?
I did.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll cut off my mic, please.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say it if y'all didn't ask, but yeah, I did.
Oh.
But I used that tool when the IRS didn't release that tool until yesterday.
Oh.
So I went on, and what it'll do, if you are getting a check, it'll say, like, your check should be deposited on this date and in the account ending in blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
And then that's how you know.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So, I have, Q-Lin, I haven't gotten mine. And so, Whitney, please send me the link. Q-Lin, if it's okay, did you get yours yet?
I have not. I just told you, I haven't got mine yet.
I ain't got mine either. So, 2 out of 3, we need to protest. Okay, all right. So.
The stimulus check thing, I wasn't even, like, paying attention to it like that. So I wasn't even taking it in that it was real.
And
I don't know why. But.
And I think the rules
were... I didn't think it was either, for real.
Well, I think...
I'm like, oh, I got the check.
And, oh, God. Well, guess what, Whitney? I'm glad you're happy. All right? But...
I am too. I got plans for that.
But for me and Q-Lin, until we see some money here, all right, it's on. All right, we need to find out what's...
What, baby?
I'm like, I'm not going to do it for real right now.
I'm still voting him out in November. Like, that's a...
I know, man.
Ain't nothing
changed. I'm glad you said that. No, nothing's changed. And you know what he's trying to do. He's trying to buy this election.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And all of a sudden, he's in love with black folks? Come on, man.
Yeah. All of a sudden, there's money.
Oh.
Like, oh, we got money.
Oh, my God.
Can I get some of that for the education side? I mean, because we don't ever get no money.
Oh, question.
Okay. I'm tripping.
Q-Lynn, Whitney, did you hear that Diamond and Silk, their Twitter account was suspended last week? Diamond and Silk. You know those sisters that's all up in Trump's whatever. Anyway, that's all up. Yeah. Oh, they goosenecking all next to him and all this guy. Oh my God. Oh, look. You would think they were family. There were photos about that. Diamond and Silk. You know who Diamond and Silk, right? These are these black ladies. I'm trying to be nice here. That are pro-Trumpers. Like Candace Owens. You know who Candace Owens is, right? Oh, God. They are Candace Owens on steroids. They're all up in the White House, right? Just kissing Trump, right? The mushroom. They got to hit them, and they came on TV and said something about, well, this coronavirus is a hoax. Kind of repeating what 45 said, the mushroom, the orange mushroom, small stem. And so they said that, and they got the account suspended. They have 1.5 million followers.
Wow.
Okay. So my point is, I don't understand these people, especially supposed to be our people with the same melanin that we have, to still support this person. And if you're waiting for a paper check, look at the signature at the bottom. Who signed off on it? It was Donald Trump. And if it was held up, it was because he held it up and he just did a press conference that said he knew nothing about it.
What? Oh, goodness.
Okay. Anyway, great show tonight. Q-Lynn, what do you have to say in closing?
I just say, I just put in my information, and it ain't saying nothing about no tax return, so.
Listen, man, I had no control over that.
Yeah, it don't say nothing.
No, no.
I just put in this information.
No,
it ain't giving me nothing. No.
No.
All available.
Mm-hmm. No, they had, no, Whitney, it has nothing to do with you. It has nothing to do with you. I don't know. It might be a conspiracy. Maybe Q-Lynn, it might be because we have been more critical. I don't know. We have no idea.
I don't know. I don't care about that hot Cheeto puffing and teeth anyway. I didn't want that. All I was going to do was spend some, buy me a new speaker or something. I don't want that damn. I don't want it. Yeah, I do want it. I do want $1,200.
It is.
It better be still going because I just saw something recently less than an hour ago that The money that's supposed to go to small business, because I was thinking about applying for that too. I said, "Damn, this line is fucking. It's long, right?"
Right. No.
This is live radio, folks. I apologize for that. But. But you have to take things in context. You know, if you drop the F-bomb in one context, it doesn't mean the same thing if you drop it in another context. We have to have that.
Yeah.
Hey, Q-Lynn, why don't you design a show around that, too?
Hysterical. We do wording with Joe
right.
Or something.
Oh, you're a genius. I tell you what, the Queen has
Listen,
just spoken.
Will is on this show. I don't know where he
gets
his energy from. He got way more energy than the both of us.
He came in on high energy. I ain't mad at him.
Yeah. He told me he was excited, but I didn't know he was that excited.
I told you.
He was excited the whole show. He got more energy than somebody that's been off coke for 2 days. Will got 8-ball energy.
Q-Lin. Hey, Q-Lin. Okay.
Hilarious.
Look here, you're not lying because I text, hey, Whitney, I text Q-Lin. It was 10 p.m. my time last night. Mm-hmm. That had to be midnight her time, right? That was last night. Then I called her this morning. Hey, Q-Lin, I called you this morning, right?
You did.
And then
he
I called.
Call
and then you called me, and then I called you again.
Yes, he was very excited every time I called.
Then you had to understand what was coming.
And he's also being petty boots as well, but we're not going to get into all that as well. That's why I know he's excited, because he's been. Yes, he is Mr. Petty Boots. We're not even going to go to that realm.
Yeah. Okay.
Well,
okay.
Man.
All right, Q-Lin. Okay. Hey, Q-Lin, take us out, please. You got
to
take...
That's what I'm trying to do.
Thank
y'all
for tuning
to
Soul Savage Radio. Every Thursday
before
the... Jesus Christ. What is he playing right now?
Oh, Stevie Wonder, baby. Fingertip.
Oh,
are you kidding me?
You're supposed to be playing some Al Green.
I know.
Right now.
I know. Anything can happen on this show.
I can't even get that.
Okay.
Every Thursday, this Soul Savage Radio Show, every Thursday, 4 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We will be back next week. Hopefully, we'll be back next week.
We will. And it's not. One thing I can promise you, we are not normal.
No, and that's okay.
My seven heater talk is Will need to lay off the 8-ball and the Pinot Green. Okay,
no.
Out, y'all.
Oh, hell.
I graduated.
No, don't encourage that, because anytime he like this, it's usually a Pinot Grigio experience or a 420 experience, and we need some order going on.
That's right.
This was the Will Brown Show for 2 hours. We'll be back. Soul Savage Radio.
No.
Every Thursday, 4 to 6 p.m. And we're
going to be honest. It's the first time I broke out of the closet in 3 years here. Q-Lin has had me in the closet.
First off, you up and said, make me out to be like I'm the female Mike Pence out here. Like I'm out here, like, shocking people out of the closet or something.
Yeah.
Oh, my
she
God.
Like, I thought I was in Siberia. Okay, they were sliding food under the door, and says, "Look, you got to record here on Thursday night
Once again, you are the only producer / engineer that has their own segment on a show. I listen to many a podcast and many a radio show, and don't none of the producers and engineers got their own segment. So, first off, I don't feel the appreciation, but that's a whole other factor. Like I said, we out here. Listen, I'm about to finish my food. We done. My 2 minutes was up. I'm about to finish my food. We out, y'all.
Yeah, that's
two
right.
2 minutes ago.
All right, Stevie Wonder. Oh, he's been talking. Oh, Whitney, he's been talking.
Everybody go ahead and just get you a line. Just get everybody
start
in.
Hey, why not?
And I want you to dedicate it to Will.
Hey.
She is encouraging cocaine use. I probably shouldn't, but I am.
I don't know, but you know what? I don't know anything about it, but that this Bacardi Gold right here is kicking.
No! We out, y'all. Soul Savage Radio.
See ya! See ya! Yeah! Yeah! We'll be right back.
Thank you.